You're listening to an encore presentation of The Rush with Ryan and Jay. News Talk 1010.
This doesn't surprise me.
I think that sends the right message on so many different levels.
What a crock, eh?
Time to feel the rush of the round table.
Welcome. Roundtable has assembled for this Monday afternoon. Joining us from the National Post is Christy Blatchford. Hello, Christy.
Hello. Hello, Amanda.
Hello. Happy National Dog Day.
Happy National Dog Day to you and Duke.
Thank you.
All right. I love this. Also from the Morning Rush at CFRA in Ottawa is Bill Carroll. Good afternoon, Bill.
Our new puppy walked into the shower and peed.
Really?
Whoa. Hey, if daddy doesn't pee in the shower, nobody pees in the shower.
That's amazing. Amazing.
I don't know about you. I hear running water. I just need to pee as well. So I think your dog's onto something.
She's banned now. Banned.
Banned from the bathroom. Yeah. And the bureau chief for the Toronto Star at Queen's Park, Robert Benzie, is here. Hey, Robert.
Hi, Jay. It's dog day afternoon.
It literally is.
Nice.
Dog day afternoon. Well put, sir. Lots to talk about inside our roundtable, so let's get started. Toronto Mayor John Tory says it is frustrating, even angering sometimes, when it comes to the lack of cooperation from people who witness shootings in the city.
When you see, as you've heard us say, and we're saying it over and over again because it's true, there are people who are repeatedly being arrested and let out on bail. This past weekend, again, as a different example, one of the people that was involved in the shooting on Friday night was a person who had not one but two recent convictions for firearms offenses in recent years, and yet they're back out on the street now doing it again.
Meanwhile, 100 people at a party over the weekend where there was a shooting, not a single person is talking. So often, these communities that have these shootings always say they need funding for community programs. But when incidents like this happen, it seems at least that no one is willing to talk to police. So I guess the question being, Christy, can a community have it both ways?
Well, I don't think they do, or perhaps more of them would be talking, if you know what I mean. I don't know about this particular community. It's just around the corner from where I live. Glencairn and Marlee is not far at all. So it's distressing because it happens everywhere now, mm-hmm. all over the city. You need citizens who are going to be good citizens. And that means some of them are going to have to talk to the cops and be witnesses at a trial, and some of them can phone Crime Stoppers and be anonymous and never have to testify. There are lots of ways to tell the cops what you know. And when you have 100 people at a party, when there's, 30 gunshots exchanged, because at least one of the alleged victims was believed to be firing back, and nobody is going to say anything, you have a real problem. It's not a gang area, so at least not to my knowledge.
Yeah, and you know what, Bill? Christy nailed it on the head. When you see, $54 million getting infused into the province for Niagara region, for Peel region, for Toronto region, for, Ottawa in some instances, clearly this is a problem, in all communities around our province.
Yeah, the examples, though, the mayor is using where somebody had two previous convictions, that's not a bail problem. That's a parole problem. It's a sentencing problem. It's not even a witness problem. Obviously, they got convictions. So that I don't think that was a great example. But I guess what bothers me is this growing idea that you just can't talk to police, right? You can't rat anybody out. I think that's a disgusting and cowardly idea, and it's a sick one. If you're genuinely afraid for your own safety because you live in a community where there are gangs and you fear it might come back to you, I get that. You hope that you in that situation would be courageous enough to come forward. I'm not sure we all would. As Christy said, there are ways to inform the police through Crime Stoppers and others. That may put them on the right track, but it also doesn't necessarily get them a conviction unless you're actually willing to go to court and sit there and testify. So I think it's not as easy, but we could start by tougher sentencing, make people live out more of their sentence. I mean, that's what they've done in California, keep the gangbangers in jail longer, and some of the gangs start to break up because there's no one to replace them. So there are things we can do. But yeah, it does start with having the courage to stand up and say something. I think it's easier said than done.
Yeah, and you certainly, Robert, you'd think that one person out of 100 would not even necessarily have the courage, but it could be courage, sure, but it might be anger that your life was in jeopardy when all you really wanted to do was go hang out with your friends and you've got, people shooting at each other.
Yeah, I mean, you almost need an I am Spartacus kind of moment where, one person steps forward and said, I saw something. Someone else says, yeah, you know what, I did too. And I get it. It can be scary, and it doesn't matter I mean, no one wants to be seen to be a quote unquote snitch or whatever. But in a time, in an era when people are boasting about their gun toting exploits on social media, whether on Instagram with video of you jacking a car or something, it would seem to me that it's not snitching. It's doing your duty as a human being to step forward.
I covered a gang. Sorry, I'm babysitting another dog at the moment. I covered a gang.
Is it having a shower?
No, it's definitely not. And he better not be peeing anywhere near the shower either. I covered a gang trial once, maybe 10 years ago, where the only reason they got a conviction was because one young man had been talked to very sternly by the victims. He was killed. The victim's mother said, I know you were there and you better go to the police this afternoon and tell them what you know. And he did. And he was even in witness protection for a time, but then he decided he didn't want to do it that way. So he testified under his real name and they got a conviction, and the bad guy, and he was a really bad guy, went to jail for a long time. And that might have been a Spartacus moment, but nobody else came and stood beside him, you know? I mean, he was by himself. And as an interesting glimpse into how small the world is for some of these guys, some of these kids, because they are kids, is this guy lived, I think it was roughly Jane Finch where he lived, the witness and the victim as well. And in all that time, that guy didn't know that Toronto was on a lake because he'd never been downtown.
Wow.
That's how small his world was.
Wow.
And I can hardly say it without weeping, because there's no reason somebody in this city should have such a dwarfed sense of things, you know?
His world may have been small, but his courage was big.
Yeah, it was.
Do truckers need more training? The OPP has been pointing out today how truckers are involved in a large percentage of the accidents on our roads. And we had two examples today of damage, both physical and financial. On the eastbound lines of the 401 were closed for about 8 hours when a truck driver who wasn't paying attention slammed into the back of some traffic. Today, also, a dump truck driver in Uxbridge last Friday was all over the road and ended up rolling his truck. So, Christy, do you think more training will solve this problem, or do we need to get even more serious with penalties and fines?
I think training is the first step, just like community programs for gang violence is the first step, and that greater penalties, as with gang violence, I would say, is the second step. I think you've first got to fix it where it needs to be fixed. And in the case of truck drivers, they got to be better trained. I mean, the lesson of Humboldt, where all those young hockey players were killed because a truck driver was young and inexperienced, completely non-malevolent. He turned out to be, I thought that truck driver was a wonderful, courageous guy. He took full responsibility for what had happened. But it sent out lessons, so let's get the laws in place.
No, Bill, I feel like every week there's a major accident. I think, you know, to Christy's point, some of these drivers are young, some of these people just need jobs. But to a certain degree, you know, how do we as a society kind of recognize that these are big, dangerous vehicles on our highways that are causing lots of problems?
Yeah, and we allowed them to get even bigger, right? And they're even harder to control. And, you know, I'm not sure. Training is absolutely part of it. There are a lot of regulations in place about how long you can drive and how much sleep you have to have. I think we still need to do a better job of controlling that. And then the other thing that we haven't talked about, just to add on top of it, and I think it's sort of cut through the silence while I was on vacation, it seems like we're already starting to talk about what jurisdictions are doing to clean up these scenes a lot faster, get the investigation done faster, and get out of there, because that's part of the economic cost. But also, the longer an accident scene sits there, the more likely there are to be other accidents that result because of the traffic that's built up. So we have to do all of those things.
Rob, what do you think when you see a truck driver on the highway?
I mean, here in Ontario, the provincial government has been working hard on this issue, in part thanks to an investigation that my colleagues at the Star did, Kenyon Wallace did a couple of years ago, where they looked at training of truck drivers, and the government responded in kind, and they have done a better job. But yeah, the accidents today suggested there's still work to be done. I think we also need to look at their equipment. Is it being inspected as often as it needs to be?
Yeah. Walkerton-style problems, in other words. You may have the law on the books, but if you're not enforcing it, you're not enforcing safety regulations, it doesn't matter.
Moving on to a story out of BC, where the father of a suspected killer at the center of a nationwide manhunt trying to access a video described as his son's last will and testament. We became aware of this video earlier this month when one of these men was found dead of a self-inflicted gunshot wound alongside of another in the wilderness of northern Manitoba. The video alleges that it says tells what they wanted to be done with their bodies after they died. This according to an email exchange between the RCMP and the Canadian press. And we're asking today, I'll start with you, Bill. Do you think that as a parent, this is something that you would deserve to see, part one? Part two, is that something that you would need and want to see?
You know, my only thinking is about the loved ones of the people who died, and if there's anything in those videotapes that helps them understand a little bit more what happened to their loved one and gives them a little comfort and some closure. You never get closure totally in these situations. That's something you live with forever. But if that gives them some closure, then I'd like to see that be the priority. I'm less concerned about the family of the killers because I just got the sense in this case that somebody wasn't really paying attention to their children as they were being brought up. And there were lots of signs they should have known there was a problem there. So I'm just I haven't put my heart to and my brain to even thinking about those people yet.
How about you, Christy?
I mean, I agree with Bill. The priority is the families of the people who were killed. But I think you can't blame parents completely for the way their kids turn out either, as some of you may come to know. I mean, you know, we're not all lucky. So, yes, I understand why the father wants to see the video. He wants to understand what he maybe didn't understand about his son in the first place.
Yeah, it's tough from all sides, but I think...
Sure, listen, I think great parents can do everything as close to right as you possibly can, and it still doesn't work out for you. I absolutely believe that. I just, that's not what I was feeling in this case. In this particular case, felt to me like dad could have been a little more involved.
Yeah.
Because you know what? If you don't know what your own kids are doing on social media, you have an issue. It's my job to spy on my children.
Robert?
Yeah, I mean, I see Bill's point and Blatch's point on this one. This is a very tough one. I think recording, there is a great amount of interest. And I think, of course, the victim's families should see it if it helps bring them some closure. I'm not sure that it will, but at least it might make them feel a little bit, have some understanding of what happened to their kids. But I think that the killers' families also probably wonder what happened to their children. I mean, and how did their kids go so wrong? I mean, now these parents maybe weren't the greatest parents ever. Clearly they weren't. But, I mean, it doesn't mean that they all need to rot in hell, you know.
And can we put closure on the word closure?
There you go.
There's no such animal as closure.
Yeah, yeah. So a moratorium from
from
at least this roundtable forward on the word closure. Christy Blatchford, thank you so much. Bill Carroll, Robert Benzie, thank you all. Have a wonderful evening.
Thanks, Jack.
I'm closed. Just don't trigger me.
We know what the trigger is for Bill. It's the dog coming into the shower.
Wouldn't that trigger you?
Yeah, I think it totally would. All right, thank you all so much. Have yourselves a wonderful evening.